On Tuesday, July 13, 2010, the Friends of Merrymeeting Bay, Ed Friedman of Bodenham, and Doug Watts of Augusta filed a notice of intent to sue under the U.S. Clean Water Act the owners of four Kennebec River hydroelectric dams. On the line with me is Ed Friedman. Ed, can you tell me what's going on?
Hi, Ron. Sure. These four dams are bound by conditions that were set forth in the Kennebec Hydro Developer Group agreement, which is an agreement that was sort of reinstated when Edwards Dam came down. Some of those conditions, or actually all of that agreement, is folded into the federal licenses that these dams hold that are called FERC licenses, or Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Conditions of that license, of that the Kennebec agreement and of the FERC license, say that adult salmon or shad can't inhabit these dam impoundments until turbine mortality, and specific to the dams, turbine mortality studies have been done to ensure that the salmon will not be, or the salmon and shad will not be injured. Now, those studies were never done, and starting in 2006, the Atlantic Salmon Commission, the dam owners, a few groups like that, started to trap returning adult salmon at the lowermost dam on the Kennebec, which now that Edwards is gone, is now Lockwood Dam up in Waterville. They took those fish and they trucked them up to the Sandy River, which comes into the Kennebec in Farmington. The Sandy is a great spawning habitat, some of the best in Maine. The problem is that we don't know if the salmon that they caught comprised 100% of the returns for the Kennebec, or, you know, some lesser amount, but, you know, they are all of the known breeding salmon, and they've taken them, they put them upstream. Those salmon now, after, you know, 10, 12,000 years of genetic programming, need to go back to the ocean to, you know, complete another phase of their life after spawning. And so they have four sets of, well, they have four dams, each dam with multiple turbines in them to, you know, take their chances and try and run the gauntlet through. These turbines are not screened to prevent the salmon from going through them. In each case, there might be one or two slots in the dam that a salmon could choose to get through by chance, but there are multiple turbines. So I liken this to kind of a reverse game of Russian roulette, where there are multiple chambers that are loaded, i.e. the turbines, and really only about one chamber that is empty, you know, that sort of forlorn sluice over there that's not getting a whole lot of flow through it. And the salmon are drawn to flow, and naturally a power company wants to attract flow through the turbine to spin it and get peak power. So that's where the fish tend to go. That's sort of it in a nutshell. We brought this action under the Clean Water Act, which allows for a citizen suit provision.
Now, if these companies agreed to put some kind of grate or grill over their turbine intakes, would that satisfy the issue?
Yes, it would. And it's a fairly simple solution. It's been done at many dams around the world and in this country and Canada. And very close to home at a couple of smaller dams, the Cabo Secante Dam on that stream coming in, the Kennebec and Gardner is a great example. Major eel kills were happening there when the eels would migrate out in the fall, which they will do. And they're the opposite of the anadromous fish, like the salmon or shad. Eels spend most of their life in the rivers and go to the Sargasso Sea in the southwestern Atlantic to spawn, and they die. And then the elvers, glass eels, then elvers, work their way back up on the currents in a random fashion the next year. When they go to out-migrate, the eels, that is, again, they were getting chopped up to pieces by this particular dam. And eels typically sink when they're cut up, as do many of the fish. And so it's really hard to find bodies, you know, particularly on a main stem river. In the case of this dam or the Benton Falls Dam on the Sebastico, if they happen to have a lot of rocks down below them, fairly shallow water, we were able to see the carnage down there. When that happened, a new manager up there at this Ridgewood Hydro facility now in Kapusi, Chuck Loon, to his credit, went down the road to downtown Gardner, the steel supply place there, TW Dick, and he had them make up a punch plate, what we call a punch plate, a big plate with a bunch of holes in it, like one-inch holes in it. Lets the water go through, but not the eels.
Hmm.
Drape that down over the trash rack. Trash rack is a looks like a jail cell bar, coarsely spaced bars, keeps trees from going into your turbine.
Uh-huh.
So he puts the punch plate down over the trash rack during the migration time, and the eel mortality dropped to zero. And so that can be done for the salmon as well. That whole thing cost Chuck about $2,500.
And these multi-million-dollar companies are bulking and having to do something similar?
Yeah, they are. And these are multi-billion-dollar companies. Florida Power and Light, now they've given themselves a new name, at least in this area, Next Era Energy. And for the Hydro Kennebec Dam, the second dam up, that's Brookfield Tower, part of Brookfield Asset Management. Used to be Braskem, standing, I think, for Brazil and Canada, another billion-dollar multinational, conglomerate and holding company. And so, yeah, a bigger dam, these are going to cost more than $2,500, but, you know, they're still probably going to be less than these guys are paying their lawyers to fight doing this, and certainly less than they, you know, probably generate in power in a day. And let's remember, Ron, these are private facilities taking advantage of public resources, that is, the rivers.
Has there been any precedence on other rivers around the United States where people have succeeded in getting these kind of grates or grills put on dams to protect salmon?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, the one on the Cavasee, there's a Fort Halifax Dam had one before it came out mm-hmm. the mouth of the Sevastocook River in Waterville. Benton Falls on the Sevastocook has one. They're putting another one in. There are larger dams as well that have them. Some of the dams on the Susquehanna River, I believe, down in the, or is it Delaware, I guess,
mm-hmm.
or Pennsylvania, Delaware, they have them. And there are others that have them as well. There's a great one in Canada that's up in Quebec. I forget if it's the Rimouski River or another one, where they've got a fairly sophisticated setup. The best setup is to take a punch plate like this, or a bar grate is often used, like angle irons, and to put them at an angle to the turbines so that the fish come up, they kind of slide off or are, you know, not pushed, but, you know, directed off to the side towards where a sluice might be for them to pass through the gate. So actually what this dam I'm thinking of does, they actually have a tip or an angle vertically in the river, shunting them off to one side, but they also tip the grate horizontally, in the horizontal plane as well. So it really moves the fish in a couple of ways, and they've got blowers down below the grate to keep the grate from being fouled. So you can get debris and stuff. So you need to make allowances to clean these things. But you clean your trash racks as well. This is not rocket science stuff. You know?
So what is it, do you think, that's holding them back from doing this, these companies?
It's just because they can. Maine is the used to be part of Massachusetts. It was always the natural resource stash for Massachusetts. It's been referred to in the past as the paper colony or the pulp colony. Paper companies do the same thing. So the state agencies typically can't do enough to accommodate the natural resources industry and those people often trying to get a tax break just from, you know, laundering some money in these ventures. You know, industrial wind is another, you know, good example right now.
Right.
And you know, what happens is whether it's wind or whether it's hydro, particularly right now, people say, oh, we got to do it, we got to do it. We've got, you know, some carbon issues here. And we obviously do have the carbon issues, and probably the best carbon sink of all is our Great North Woods,
mm-hmm.
which if we leave it intact, and we leave the rivers free-flowing, they will absorb a lot of carbon. Once you start to make impoundments or cut down the woods, that's a different story. You start to generate, you know, more CO2.
Now let me ask you on the energy question, are the dams in Maine responsible for a significant amount of the electricity consumed in Maine?
We produce more electricity than we use. So we send excess out of state, and as you may know, you know, there's a tremendous project right now in the works by CMP, which is now owned by the Spanish company, starts with an I here, Iberdrola or something like
yep.
that.
I
can't remember the name. But it's called the Maine Power Reliability Project. And what they're proposing to do is build 350 new miles of transmission corridor in the state. That's going to help in opening up the western hills, the north, to industrial wind. It's there probably to move power down from the Maritimes to south of us. It's being funded in large part by the New England pool of utilities.
So you're saying that Maine is not only a paper colony, but also an energy colony to greater New England and the greater East Coast?
It is, and it is in a bad way, I think. And, you know, we will do anything to make a fast buck or try to. And, you know, there's been plenty of studies that show that, again, for example, industrial wind is not a moneymaker. It's actually a money loser. So I think when you see folks like, you know, Rob Gardner, Angus King, people that have been involved here for quite a while, invest in these big things, I think it's kind of a tax break, sort of a tax shelter thing. In the case of the hydropower, yeah, they're making money. They're making gobs of money because, again, this is a public resource, but private industry is making money here. The turbine is in there. These dams were paid for many, many, many years ago. There's sort of minimal upkeep on most of them, and they just, you know, like to think of them as a cash machine. You know, the turbine spins and money comes out the other end. You know? we're making money, you know, out of the blood of migratory fish. You know?
Right.
And it's not just when the fish are killed. And I should mention that talked about salmon. Salmon, as you know, are now the Endangered Species Act just was beefed up to include more of the salmon and the Androscoggin and the Penobscot and the Kennebec, which were left out of the original listing because these are industrial rivers and there was a lot of flack about, you know, will that interfere with industry? Well, those fish are now listed. It's partly why we brought the action now. More focus there. We should, you know, get some support from the feds. We probably won't. But we were aware of this problem back, 2004 or 5 when we were taking some of these issues to the BEP. We just started to move the fish over the dams in 2006, so that's been happening for a few years. And then with the shad, they just moved the first shad this year. Shad do not like to go up fishways, fish ladders at all, fish lifts not often. In this case, this is the first year they've gone into the lift and been trapped here in Lockwood.
Hmm.
So they're not getting the full four-dam treatment, lucky shad. They're just getting carried up over two dams. So they'll have, you know, half of the risk as they out-migrate.
Oh, I see. It's as if they're playing Russian roulette with only three of the chambers.
Yeah, something like that. Well, see, that's where you get into the cumulative impact because, you know, typically a dam might have something anywhere from, you know, 10 to 90% mortality. A turbine,
uh-huh.
you know, depends on the turbine style, the speed, the type of fish, and all that stuff. But, you know, okay, so we got, you know, let's say we got 20% mortality, and we start off with 100 fish trying to out-migrate. Well, so you go through the dam, and you got 80 fish left. Well, now if there's three more dams to go through, now you got 80 fish, you go through, you know, that's another... 16 fish that get wiped out, and you keep going down, and by the time you get to the end of the fourth dam, there's not a lot of fish left. So that's the thing with these intensively dammed rivers that are so typical of Maine. We have multiple dams, and so cumulative mortality is a huge.
The gauntlet is pretty huge. What about Conservation Law Foundation, NRCM, and other organizations like that? Surely they see this problem. What's their take?
Well, in the case of Conservation Law Foundation, or CLF, they've not been involved in this issue at all. They actually own some energy-producing plants elsewhere, and I don't honestly remember what kinds they are. So they're in the energy business, and they actually, in the case of that Maine Power Reliability Project I started to mention, they signed a stipulation agreement, a settlement accord on that project, basically saying, okay, go ahead, and we will not speak out against this project at all. NRCM, on the other hand, they were one of the groups that signed the Kennebec Hydro Developers Agreement when Edwards Dam came out, along with Trout Unlimited, Kennebec Valley Trout Unlimited, and the Atlantic Salmon Federation. And part of that agreement was a gag order saying you will not and cannot speak out against or assist in anything that would, jeopardize or dispute any part of this agreement. And as I said, the conditions on which we're suing here were language that were part of the KHDG agreement. So they can't say anything about this. And in fact, when we were talking about this issue at the BEP a number of years ago around eels, actually, the NRCM actually got up and spoke out against us.
Huh. I was about to ask you, is there any possibility that should they not agree to settle within this initial period, that groups like CLF or NRCM will come in as friends of the court intervene on the side of the dam owners?
I don't know that they would do that. I would hope, as we said at the time, a number of years, when we were up at the BEP, and actually someone from NRCM was interviewed on the radio, and we said, why the heck didn't they just say no comment? Do they have to start speaking out against what they should be trying to protect just because they signed the agreement? That was absurd. It was horrible. And they could come in, I suppose, and file an amicus brief. I don't think they would do that because I think, that would be too much for their members,
Yeah.
I think the members aren't aware what the staff are doing typically up there, and that's probably what happened before. On the other hand, there's a number of groups that would likely, file an amicus with us. Or certainly are thinking strongly about that. And there's some national groups that are interested in this, the National Environmental Law, NELC, National Environmental Law Center, Defenders for Wildlife, the Center for Biological Diversity. I don't think they'll get involved in this one, but they've been involved with us before and will be again. And maybe NRDC, so... The folks that are a few steps removed from the politics of Maine, are more likely to get involved. And so we're telling these other folks, it's like, we know you're busy down in the Gulf of Mexico, but this is the other Gulf up here, the Gulf of Maine. And these fish and the movement of migratory fish in and out of Maine's rivers are crucial to the health of the Gulf of Maine, which was the breadbasket of New England, and unfortunately is really no longer that, partly because of overfishing, but in large part because these forage species, not so much the salmon, but the alewives and the shad, the blueback herring, can no longer get up to their spawning areas and get back out anymore. And these are the fish species that the larger fish, typically the cod or pollock or whoever in the Gulf, depend on.
Now, are the salmon the only ones that can go up these spillways that are made for fish to go up?
No. It depends on the fish, and they all like slightly different things. So, alewives can go up a fish ladder, for example, but it's only a fraction of the number of fish, in a large schooling species like that, that make it up. I want to say that when the Fort Halifax Dam was was there at the mouth of the Sebastico, maybe 10% of the alewives that were milling around in the river actually came in and used that, you know, passageway. Whereas now that's gone, you know, and there's a really nice fish lift up at Benton Falls, next dam up, and they're doing a really good job with it. I think they moved something like 650,000 alewives this year.
Well, I know that I've heard from commercial fishermen that they're very eager for this to happen, that these bait fish, as they call them, will certainly nourish the ground fish and other fishes that they prefer to market.
Absolutely. You know, and they make for some of the best bait as well, and they feed the fish, you know, as well. This sort of brings up another issue. You know, are you better off, should you let the alewife harvesters harvest them for lobster bait, or are you better off letting them go out and feed the bigger fish in the Gulf? So it's like, okay, so now it's the alewivers and the lobstermen versus the ground fishermen. Everyone wants a piece of the alewife, you know?
Not to mention the eagles that are waiting for the alewives to come up so they can feed.
Well, exactly. And of course, this is the same thing with the elvers and the eels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a tremendous amount of nutrient flow from the Gulf of Maine up to the interior of Maine when these fish move in, and there is the reciprocal of that when these fish out migrate.
Huh, and that's why we have such a amazing history in the 16th, 17th, and early 18th century as the fishermen are so amazed by the abundance. But then as these dams come up, that's one more thing that has caused the decline.
It's arterial sclerosis, Ron.
Mm.
The blockage of our arteries. It's the exact same thing.
My gosh.
And we can only take so much before, you know, we're dead. And so I guess what we're doing now is, you know, we're dialing 911.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Now, so what is the timeline? And then we're going to have to take off.
Okay. Yeah, well, when filing a 60-day notice letter is a requirement of the Clean Water Act in a citizen suit. So doesn't mean that you need to file your suit 61 days. You can file it at any time afterwards. So, you know, we could file it in a year. We could file it in 2.5 months. And that'll be something that we will look at as the time, you know, rolls around. And part of the point of filing the letter is that the folks that are on the other end, the receiving end of it,
mm-hmm.
the dam owners, have a chance to sit down with us and say, yeah, you know, we really don't want to go to federal court. You know, we're on the hook here. You know, you guys got a good case. The burden is on us to prove to the court that we have done these turbine mortality studies, and we haven't, and there are fish up there. What would you like? You know, what can we do to resolve this without going to court? What can we do to settle?
Well, that's very optimistic, and so you think that is possible, though?
Well, it's possible. It's, I don't know that that's likely necessarily, but that's the point of you're asking about timeline.
Yeah.
That's sort of part of the point of filing a 60-day notice. I mean, I haven't thought about this before, but it probably is a mechanism to try and, you know, minimize some of the court traffic, you know?
Right.
Sort of like going to mediation first or something, you know?
All right.
So it's, you know, it's insane what's happening in the rivers. You know, there were, I think, 15 salmon trapped at Lockwood last year. Maybe a few more before that. It might have been like 26 in 2006, something like that. But the numbers are small anyway. This year, there were only four.
Four.
So, yeah. So we are watching the end of the game here, I think. Unless we do something, you know, rather dramatic very quickly, things don't look good.
Huh. So this is sort of a Hail Mary throw here, and I certainly hope it works. All right. I've been speaking with Ed Friedman of Bodenham, and he and Douglas Watts of Augusta and Friends of Merrymeaning Bay have filed a notice of intent to sue under the Clean Water Act to get these dams to stop indiscriminately killing endangered Atlantic salmon and protected American shad. All right. Well, look, thank you very much, Ed.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Thanks for caring about this and making your listeners and readers aware of it. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll be in touch.
Bye-bye.
You were listening to a July 17, 2010 interview of Ed Friedman of Boatingham. On July 13th, Mr. Friedman, the Friends of Merrymeeting Bay, and Douglas Watts of Augusta jointly filed a notice of intent to sue the owners of four Kennebec River hydroelectric dams for refusing to install fish excluder grills over their turbine intakes. The plaintiffs say the dams violate the Federal Clean Water Act by killing large numbers of endangered Atlantic salmon and protected American shad. The fish are killed when they get caught up in the dam's turbines while migrating downriver to the Gulf of Maine. For more information about this case and about the Kennebec River watershed generally, visit the website of Friends of Merrymeeting Bay at www.friendsofmerrymeetingbay.org.